countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers.
Now, over the past few weeks, Suzanne has been telling us about the crisis facing the producers of fruit and vegetables and the crisis facing pig farmers around the country. There seems to be this disconnect between how much it costs a farmer to produce fresh fruit and then the price that we're willing to pay for that food in the supermarkets and shops. Now, Damien O'Reilly is an expert in retail management at TU Dublin, and he joins me now. Damien, good morning, and I'm not talking to myself. There are a few of us around the country, but I think you're the one with an A in your name. I'm the one with the and you're the more intelligent one here this morning.
Oh, it's going to
fill us in on everything. Let's go back and get a breakdown to where we shop. Where are most of us doing our food shopping nowadays?
Well, the main supermarket zone around the Supervalu, Tesco and Dunnes would have around 22% of the market themselves. So in and around that, the top three are in around the same. And then you've got the discounters, which are coming in around 12% each. So that's 24% for the discounters. So if you're looking to see where we buy our goods from, and the food market, the retail market for groceries is probably around 15 billion in Ireland at the moment. So you can see it's very concentrated in those top five retailers.
Yeah, and you're saying five. So Lidl and Aldi, I mean, they've come from a standing start out of nowhere to a quarter of sales.
Yeah. So 20 years ago, I remember being at a conference, and the retailers were worried about the discounters entering the market and wanted legislation to stop them entering the market. But they've grown organically since then. So they've probably got around 150 to 200 stores, each of them around the country. So what they're looking to do now is to, they can't grow organically at the moment because they're kind of saturation at the moment in the number of stores they have. So they're looking to contest certain areas in the grocery trade with the big supermarkets to gain the extra market share, to take market share from the big retailers.
Yeah, like competition is great, as we know, and we can shop around, to use that phrase, which is very popular recently. But cynics might call this competitive market a race to the bottom, that the downside is that it is a race to the bottom, particularly when it comes to some of the items in our shopping trolley.
Prices have definitely, like over the last 20 years, you'll have noticed we talk about inflation, and inflation being in food at the moment in January is around 2%. But the price of food actually over the last 20 years has probably gone down. You know, because of the input of the discounters, they've brought prices down. They've made it very, very competitive and taken margin out of the business.
And how can they sell so low?
Well, it's they sell around 1,800 items, or stock keeping units as they're called, whereas the big supermarkets will have anything up to 20,000. So it's a different business model, but basically, they sell huge volumes. The costs are very low. Their labour costs are extremely low.
They've fewer staff. They've no butcher counter, stuff like that.
Yeah. No fresh food counters at all. So if something isn't selling, it's basically taken off the shelf and replaced with something else. So they're able to generate lower prices. And then what the big retailers have had to do has been very, very clever with their supply chain. So they've, you know, we've driven costs out of the supply chain over the last 10, 15 years.
And, you know, slick advertising has conditioned, it's lured us in the door, and it's conditioned us to believe that if we're spending too much on our food, we're foolish. You see the ads on television, you know, the O'Reilly family were able to save X amount this month, you should go and shop there. Yeah. So what has that actually done to us? It's conditioned us to set in our head a kind of a price point for certain food products.
Well, they've been very good as well. Yeah, they have done that, but they've been very good as well. If you take Lidl, for example, have changed the layout of their store, whereas, you know, several years ago, they would have had a different layout. But now they've made it kind of more upmarket, so they're competing on the visuals and the appeal and where the groceries are in the store when you come in. So the fresh food is there, and they're enticing people to come in and buy in those sections.
Yeah. Can I just paint this scenario? Now, this may be very simplistic, but if we have a circle which begins with consumers demanding higher quality, maybe organic food to help protect the planet, the farmer then saying, well, we'd like to meet that demand, but we can't afford to because the retailer won't pay us what we need to produce that more organic, sustainable produce. And the retailer then saying, because we're answerable to the consumer and our customers who are shopping around for value, and then the cycle begins again.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a vicious circle in that regard. Consumers, on the one hand, we want better quality food, but it seems we want to shop around and spend as little as we can on food.
We do. And I think the next generation, you know, Generation Z and then Generation Alpha are really going to have a big impact on this, because they're looking more at sustainability and healthy living. And they want to associate themselves with a brand, being either the brand in the store or the store as a brand, to be able to say that they're buying sustainable, that they're buying healthy, that they're environmental friendly. So these things are happening at the moment. And what we're doing more now in consumer behaviour is what I'd call repertoire shopping. So basically is that, you know, I'll shop in one place for my detergents, I'll buy alcohol somewhere else, I'll buy my fresh food, vegetables in some other store. So we're doing that more and more.
But that requires a lot of planning. They're called convenience stores for a reason.
Yeah, well, the convenience stores actually sector, the Spars and the Mason, the Londas, they're actually, you know, we do a lot of shopping there because we do our main shop somewhere, one of the big stores, but we tend to do a lot of top-up shopping here in Ireland, and we're the best at convenience here in Ireland.
But we still work on a budget, and as we've pointed out quite a lot recently, we spend less than 10% of our household disposable income on food. Now, that's because we're spending an awful lot more money now on things we didn't 30 years ago, Sky, Netflix, mobile phones, etc., etc. But I appreciate there's a lot of people listening to us this morning that are maybe on the poverty line, only have a budget for a certain amount of money each week to feed a family. So they don't want to hear about the price of food going up.
No, absolutely not. But input costs have gone up. And if you were to take, as I said there, over the last 20 years, food prices have actually come down. So there's been deflation in food price. But what's happened is it's only in the last quarter that we've had these increases. And food inflation is just 2%. I know some parts of it, like you had that discussion on flour there, you know. So bread prices have gone up by about 7%. Pasta has gone up by 7%. Vegetable fats have gone up 12%. Alcohol is going to go up because of the minimum unit pricing. So it's going to add to the basket of inflation. But in general, the food prices have stayed very, very stable over the last number of years.
Okay, Suzanne is still with us. And just a question finally and briefly to both of you, Suzanne. You know, do we as consumers, and you're talking to them all the time, do we need to reassess our approach to food shopping in the round to protect the local producer, to protect the environment and to reduce food waste, all within a budget? And that's just to mention three or four issues. Do we need to disrupt the shopping experience as we know it to keep everybody happy?
I think it's multi-stranded. I mean, if you're on a low income, you don't have those choices. And a lot of people are in that position now where their budget for food is less this year. I mean, food producers have been telling me over the past 2 years, their packaging went up 20-30% during the course of the Brexit impact, let alone the pandemic. Other inputs went up and they weren't passing this on to the retailer. They were kind of saying, we'll withhold these costs and bear them ourselves. So all of a sudden, all these things have hit. So everything's gone up at the same time. But those increases in the price of food was actually artificially low for the past 2 years, particularly as inputs were rising. For consumers, it's a real difficult one. You know, those of us with income who have an understanding of food and food production and environment, is there an onus on us, just like there is to look for fair trade coffee or tea or chocolate, to look, you know, I want a vegetable that's produced where the farmer is paid fairly. I want a chicken produced where the chicken has a better chance of an outdoor life, so I'd only buy free range chickens. Those are choices which consumers have to make who have more money, perhaps in the future.
Yeah, and we are conscious that we're in a little bit of a bubble here. We deal in the whole area of food and farming and a middle class view maybe of things. But a lot of people listening, as I said, are working off a budget, and they still put price above provenance, maybe against their better judgment in that regard. But Damien, you say that even at €5 a week, if we redirect that, it could make a big difference.
Well, yeah, we did a little bit of research in the School of Retail, and one of the things we found out is if you were to change €5 of your €100 spend, for example, to buy an Irish produce rather than a foreign produce, you know, the example I use is maybe buying some branded coffee that comes in, or you could buy something like Java Republic coffee, which is they bring the beans in, but everything else is done here. They roast it, they package it, they advertise it. Everything's done here, and they create, you know, they've about 100 jobs there. But if we were to change to buy something like that for €5, you know, we could increase the number of jobs here by about 30,000 to 35,000.
Right, that's
so buying locally and buying Irish is you know, you got to do that,
and it doesn't take that much of a shift. That's really interesting. So a lot of people going out to do their weekly shop today, if they spend €100, just maybe change one item for an Irish one worth a fiver, and you're actually playing a big part.
Absolutely, yeah. And the more we buy locally, the more, you know, the more the jobs stay in Ireland, and the money then gets recirculated. So that kind of multiplier effect. Yeah. So for every €100 we spend in Ireland on Irish produce, that gets circulated around five times. So it's worth €500 to the local economy.
Yeah, very interesting trends there, and very interesting findings that you've given us. Thank you so much, Suzanne. Thank you as always. We'll chat to you again in the next week or two. And to Damien O'Reilly, lecturer in retail at the Technological University of Dublin, TU Dublin. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.